I want to reemphasize the idea that you may not have a mental health issue, like a quote unquote diagnosis that I could give you, but that doesn't mean a room, a conversation, someone there to just kind of pick apart and dissolve the issue can't be helpful.
And now, a word from our partners.
DACA Scholars is the number one app used by Latino students across the country. Inside of DACA Scholars, you will find over 140 scholarships for both undocumented and DACA students, all the way from high school to a PhD level. DACA Scholars is absolutely free and available for all iPhones, Androids, and Windows Phone.
Saludo familia! This is Christian, host and producer of La Verdad Podcast, a show where urban Latinos sit back and chat about current events, culture, and tradition. Our podcast also features interviews with other Latinos who are motivating and uplifting our community. So make sure to check us out on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter as @LaVerdadLTD. Also, just so you know, our podcast is available on YouTube. Gracias y quien dijo miedo.
Hey y'all, I'm Rene Garcia, the host of Chubby Therapy, a show normalizing conversations about mental health. Join me, the Chubby Therapist, as we promote mental wellness with both clinicians and everyday people. We are unbelievably proud to collaborate with UndocuTalks, so please check us out on your favorite platform, and as always, remember to feed your mental health.
Hello, UndocuTalks listeners. My name is Rafael Martinez, and I will be your host for this month's episode, Season 3, Episode 3, titled Immigration and Mental Health with Chubby Therapy Podcast. In the beginning of today's show, you listen to the Chubby Therapist, Rene Garcia himself, who will be joining us for today's show and will actually be doing a takeover of our podcast for this month's episode. We have started a collaboration with Chubby Therapy Podcast and Rene Garcia as a way to share and encourage listeners to listen to podcasts on mental health, a subject that is near and dear to our UndocuTalks collective members. For today's episode, Rene interviewed our co-founder, Rafael Martinez, which is me again, and we'll be having a conversation about my own story and also the way that there is clear intersections between mental health and immigration and the ways in which we have to talk about these important matters. So stay tuned and listen to this insightful conversation with Rene Garcia, the Chubby Therapist.
I was able to sit down with Rafael Martinez, today's guest, and we almost lost this episode. Okay, I'll be honest with you. We almost lost this episode, and I was going to be really upset if we did just because the conversation came out so good. So I really hope you enjoy it. Whenever I took on the partnership with UndocuTalks, the other podcast, really wanted to have a time to sit down with my friend Rafael to really discuss what the program was about and just kind of to connect the dots and why this was such a good partnership and something I'm really proud of and I really hope to see flourish as we move on. So I'm going to go ahead and let him tell his story and just the story behind UndocuTalks, and then I'll touch base with you afterwards. Rafa Martinez, welcome to Chubby Therapy, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be on your show, and it's a pleasure to work with you and collaborate with you.
Yeah, you know, I feel like I've been hyping up this conversation for a couple of weeks now on my show, so I'm actually really excited about it because I think when the conversation began about us collaborating and being partners, of course, I got excited because I love your show anyways. But on top of it, too, it's also for it's important to the community that I feel very close to or that I support. I do my best to support as often as I can. So I'm really excited to see where it goes future. But as far as this goes, you know, I know you a little bit as an acquaintance and a friend. So let's kind of get people up to speed on who you are. And so let's go and start.
Originally, I was born in Guanajuato, Mexico, and I moved to Los Angeles, California when I was 3 years old. And then about 20 days later, I turned 4 years old. I celebrated my fourth birthday in the United States. And, you know, I grew up in LA all of my life. The last 6 years I've been living in Albuquerque, New Mexico, which have been great, but I still, you know, call LA home.
Of course, of course. Do you remember, do you have any memories of you coming over here to the U.S.? Any experiences you remember as a young kid?
I don't remember coming to the United States at all, actually. Been able to sort of recreate those moments based on the memories that my parents have shared with me. I did migrate to the United States with my parents and with my uncles. And so, but no, I actually don't remember. I think I was too small. And, you know, that's something that I constantly to this age continue to push myself to try to make memories of it. But I actually don't recall. But my parents would tell me a lot of stories. And actually the things that they share with me, probably if I were to share them now with a therapist, they would be quite interested and want me to expand on some of those things, because my parents would share with me that I would tell my parents that I didn't want to be in the United States, that I wanted to be back in Mexico, and that I had my friends back in Mexico. So what were we doing in the U.S.? I was questioning about their decision at such an early age, and to the point where I would tell them that if we didn't go back to Mexico, that I would try to hurt myself or I would try to kill myself, which, you know, again, I don't recall, but this is what they tell me. And They said that they got pretty scared to the point where they had to hide any knives or any scissors or anything of that sort, just because they were concerned for my well-being. And luckily, I didn't do anything crazy. And, you know, after time, I guess like everything, you're at such a young age that you learn to adapt and grow with the new place. And so luckily, I did have my cousins to grow up with when we moved to L.A. All of my family first moved to L.A. So my uncles, my aunts, my cousins, we all started in L.A. And then slowly but surely, my parents were the only ones who stayed in LA. They're still in LA to this date. And then most of my uncles have all moved to different parts of California, Chicago, Pennsylvania, Texas, all over the place, essentially. And my parents were the only ones who stayed in LA.
Welcome to LA, where the palm trees sway. But don't you get it twisted when you come this way.
When I say I grew up in LA, I grew up in South Central LA, which people hear all the time is all kinds of stereotypes and negative things about LA. But growing up in the early 90s in LA was rough. And when my parents would tell me that we came to the U.S. for a better life, I couldn't believe it, right? Because I would look outside my home and there was crazy stuff going on. No. And, you know, I was 6 years old when the LA riots happened, or the LA uprising happened. And, you know, things were burning outside of my house, and I was trying to make sense of it at 6 years old. And, you know, I would tell my parents, what do you mean we came here for a better life? Like, I'm looking outside my window and literally the city's on fire. Like, you know, that didn't make any sense to me. But the time that it did make sense to me was when I would go to school, or during the summers, I would go with my parents to their work. And, you know, my parents have always worked in the garment industry. The part where we're from in Mexico, in Guanajuato, we're known for making clothes and sewing and garment industry. So my parents have always worked in the garment industry. And so I would go with them after school and during the summers to spend the time there while they work. I did work, or I just hang out. And they would tell me, like, you know, if this is what you want to do, then by all means, this is what you do. If this is not what you want to do, your outlet's going to be education and school is going to be your way out. So that's something that always stuck with me. And then from there on, I said, you know, education's always going to be like a sanctuary for me.
That's probably a good segue to go into what I want to go next to is just common mental health issues in the undocumented community. Obviously, I know you're not a clinician, Rafa, but I mean, just kind of what do you see as common mental health struggles from the undocumented, your own personal experience, and also maybe the undocumented community that you've come in contact with?
As you mentioned, I'm not a clinician. I'm not a mental health expert. So, you know, everything that I'll mention forward is from my own experience and what I've lived, but also what I've seen in our community. I do want to preview that. And then I also want to point listeners to episode 2 of season 2. Is called Immigration Status and Mental Health. And we had a whole episode on mental health from a contributor. Her name is Norma Ramirez, and she's out in California. I do want to point people to that episode where I think they could get a lot more from that subject matter. As far as what I've seen, if you will, within our community is definitely access, resources, and again, just eliminating that stigma of mental health, because it's heavily rooted where growing up, you're told that's loco, you're going crazy, right? Like just to being able to talk about stress. Right. Or simply don't stress too much. Well, how can I not stress too much? Right. And so it's being able to tackle those in our families, in our communities, but also having resources. Right. Because being immigrant also means you usually typically don't have access to health care or, you know, health resources that not only just of your health, your well-being, but also of things like mental health. And there are clinics and there are great organizations, nonprofits that do mental health in our communities. But many of those, of course, don't have resources of doing great outreach. So it's always connecting people to resources that are financially sound for our community. So that's a big problem, I think, is just finding resources, getting to people connected with access. And then earlier, I kind of talked about this idea of our migration story, of our current immigration status is constantly in the back of your head, and the fear of basically facing deportation or committing a crime of some sort, doing wrong, right? And so that's daily stress. Plus, added to that, the trauma that we've already lived of just simply coming to the United States. Like I said, my entrance into the U.S. wasn't super difficult, but for many people, it is, right? And that creates trauma that they carry on for many years that involves sexual abuse, that involves violence, that involves all kinds of really horrible things that many immigrants experience coming to the United States. And so carrying all that, plus dealing with work, plus us who are in education, carrying the stress of education, and then carrying the stress of the daily attacks we face in the media, right? Or the daily possibility that our status is are going to be even in a much vulnerable position. I mean, in this last presidential administration that we're currently in, every single day feels like, you know, an attack to our community. Every single day, there's a stress about DACA being removed. Every day there's stress about something else happening. And so I feel like just living on an everyday basis, we might not show it, we might not tell anybody about it, but we feel it and we carry it. And if that doesn't go treated, you better than I know what the consequences for many of those actions are. Luckily, I do have spaces like the Undocu Talks Collective and other spaces where I'm able to unwind and share a lot of my feelings and a lot of my experiences.
We don't even have to go into like the predisposition of like addiction and being schizophrenic or anything like that. We could just stick with anxiety and depression. And anxiety is under the stress disorders umbrella. And so, I mean, when we're talking about stress, it's either the way I was taught about it was either acute stress or chronic stress. So like acute stress is like, you know, you're on a roller coaster. Like we pay good money for that. You know what I'm saying? Like it's fun, you know, but the chronic stress is the stuff that are high blood pressure, heart disease, poor eating, poor health conditions. And then on top of it, it's just constant worry. And then the depression side, I mean, there isn't just one form of depression. There's dysphoria where you're just chronically kind of bummed out. You know, there's adjustment disorders where it's like seasonal depression. And so again, I mean, there is so many kind of common issues just with depression and anxiety, I think, with the undocumented community that, you know, and unfortunately, at least in my experience, is that there is a strong kind of religious overtone for that kind of background. And so a lot of it is, okay, we'll just go to the church, let's see what we can do, which is fine. I'm not going to tell you not to do that. But I'm also going to be the first one to say, listen, what the church can do, I can't do, but also what I can do, I don't think the church can do.
Exactly.
I'm not about to challenge God right now, but I am trying to say, listen, we all have our roles in all of this. You know what I'm saying? And I do think that's a foundation for you. And if you're listening to this, if that's a foundation for you, I think it's a great one. And I'm not going to tell you not to do that. But I am also going to tell you, okay, if you feel like you're not getting everything that you need, how can you fill it with maybe a support group or maybe some individual therapy or maybe going out to joining a softball league or something like that, you know, if you have the means and the time to do it. And so that's the other side of it too, is being able to really chip into these cultural norms, which is, I think, is going back, kind of going full circle here, why it's so important to hear directly from undocumented voices. Because we can sit here
then psychology has a really shitty history about it. I'll be the first one to say it, of hitting what they call the weird communities. And the weird communities are, which were a lot of the early studies, which is what we founded and really molded early psychology. But basically this one sect of community was what a lot of these early psychological studies was based off of. And so we need to openly, as well as psychology and therapists, understand that we have to take a very kind of what I was taught, a postmodern view of psychology, and really put ourselves client-centered. How are we doing our best to understand the person who's sitting in a therapy chair across from us and to understand all of their experiences, despite what our biases? And I think that's one advantage of taking that bias hat off when you go into the therapy room. Obviously, it's the ethics side of it, but also, too, you have to really dive deep, because even if you have people in your life that are undocumented, that doesn't mean that that's going to represent the entire experience of the person that's sitting in front of you in the therapy room.
For the tail end of our conversation with Rene Garcia, he talked to us about the creation of UndocuTalks and the spaces that we're creating for healing within our UndocuTalks collective. Let's take a listen. First and foremost, I think that the space has been, you know, therapeutic for our collective members and themselves. You know, I often hear from every single member of our collective, our team, that says that, you know, after we record, after our session, it almost feels like therapy, because it's, you're letting go of so many feelings, so many emotions that we're carrying with us. And many times our immigrant community, unfortunately, doesn't have those spaces or doesn't seek formal mental health help, if you will. And so we carry that stress, we carry that weight in our shoulders. And it's not until we create those spaces that we are able to kind of heal, if you will. But also luckily we've had young people contacted us from all over the country saying that they listen to our show and they totally dig it and they're supportive of it because they feel they're healing, and they feel that they're healing because it's good for them to know that there's other people like themselves and all over the country, essentially. And sometimes these people are in remote areas, right? Where, for example, you mentioned privilege, and within the undocumented community, there's levels of privilege as well. And for example, one of the privileges that I have is being in a state like New Mexico that is fairly pro-immigrant and fairly tolerant of immigrant communities, and have always lived in a place, even in California, that was fairly tolerable of immigrant communities. But some of our listeners are coming from the South, are coming from the Midwest, places where immigration is very much anti-immigrant sentiment, and the laws reflect that. And so they cannot be undocumented, unafraid. They cannot be out with their story, if you will. But in hearing stories like ours, it gives them like a reassurance that they matter, that their story matters. And that's why we continue to do the show, because I think it does create a space for healing internally within our collective, but also definitely with our list. And that's one thing that we hope to continue to accomplish.
All right, man. We'll keep in touch, man.
Órale, pues.
So I loved that conversation. I felt Rafael gave a really good picture, painted a really good picture of purpose and the mission of UndocuTalks and really the necessity of that program. And I just can't tell Rafa how much I appreciate, and again, I'll say it again, super proud I am for them to allow me to be part of their collective and their group. And I really hope to see us continue to work and coordinate in the future. And very well aware of the polarizing nature of this subject. And I choose to be on this side. I completely understand if you do not, and you choose to distance yourself from that side. But I think that's the purpose of the UndocuTalks, is to give a vision or give insight, to this community that, again, I just don't see being publicized. So give them a chance, give this topic a chance, and I really appreciate your time today. And as always, remember to feed your mental health.
We want to thank again Rene Garcia for having us on his Chubby Therapy podcast. And as a form of our collaboration, this has been remixed and transmitted for our podcast episode. If you are interested in listening to the full interview with Rene Garcia and Chubby Therapy, please visit Chubby Therapy on social media and find them wherever you get your podcast to listen to the full interview. Now we're going to move on to our UndocuNews segment with Alejandro Mendiez.
Bienvenidos on DocuTalks listeners. This is Alejandro Mendiaz Rivera, your Undocu News host. For today's episode and news update, there's only really one topic to cover for the month of March, and that is the American Dream and Promise Act of 2019. So you might be wondering, what is the American Dream and Promise Act of 2019? I haven't seen it on the media. I haven't seen it on the papers. I haven't seen it in the headlines. Well, like most of us, you may not have, because it hasn't really been gaining a lot of attention. What the American Dream and Promise Act of 2019 is basically the solution that we've all been waiting for in terms of immigration reform for undocumented youth. It's a bill that would provide a pathway to citizenship for people who are DACA recipients or for people who meet certain qualifications. And so what are those qualifications? That you've been continuously present in the United States for at least 4 years before this bill is passed, that you entered the U.S. before turning 18, that you graduated from high school, that you have been admitted to a college or joined the military, or that you've been continuously employed for at least 3 years. Why are we not more excited about this bill? You know, why hasn't this caught more traction? And the answer, the simple answer, is that this bill has a very low probability of actually making it into law. So why is that? The reason is that all of its co-sponsors are Democrats. It has 218 sponsors. All of them are Democratic. That sounds like a great thing in theory. It definitely has the votes to pass the House of Representatives. However, if this bill makes it to the Senate, it's not very likely to be heard, much less to be passed. The reason for that being is that it's a solely Democratic bill. This is not a bipartisan bill. There have been no Republicans that have put input into it. There have been no Republicans that have co-sponsored it that have shown interest in backing this bill. And so this bill was introduced in March 12th. Today is March 25th. And as of today, there are no Republican co-sponsors. And so some of you might be wondering, well, Alejandro, this sounds like a great bill. You know, it's a clean bill. It's what a lot of people have been asking for in terms of a solution for DACA or in terms of a, you know, immigration reform for younger folks. Well, yes, it is great in theory. However, practically, it's not very likely to pass the Senate and therefore, again, not very likely to become law. One of the other great provisions of this bill, right, it's a mashup between the DREAM Act and the American Promise Act. And so what this bill would also do is it would solve the dilemma of people whose temporary protected status has been canceled. And so people under temporary protected status would also get a pathway to be able to become a legal permanent resident. And additionally, if you've been deported and you meet some of these other criteria, you could also apply for legal permanent residency from abroad if you met the conditions back in 2016. Again, in theory, great provisions, doing some great things for our community, but in practicality, right now, it just does not have any political traction whatsoever in order to become law. And so what are some of the things that we can do as a community? What are some of the things that you as listeners can do out there? If you live in a Republican district, if you have a Republican member of the House of Representatives or a Republican senator that you are a constituent of, you can call them and you can ask them to look into H.R. 6, House Resolution 6, the American Dream and Promise Act of 2019, and ask them to consider co-sponsoring it or ask them to consider working with Democrats on a solution that they could support. I think that one of the downfalls to this act could be that you're going to have some Republican members that are going to want to add a poison pill, that are going to want to attach the wall funding to it, right? Which is something that Democrats don't want. They don't want a solution for DACA tied to funding for the wall. Of course, you had Trump with his emergency declaration for no emergency, but they still want more money. They still want more funding. And so that's one of the ways that they could try to see circumventing the legal challenges that his emergency is facing and still try to get the funding while not passing something that is substantive enough for our communities. And so even though it's a long shot, you know, we have to take every shot that we can. If you, again, live in a Republican district or have a Republican senator, make sure you reach out and say, hey, there is this bill on the table right now. What would it take for you to co-sponsor and to support this bill in order to make it work so that it not only passes the House as a symbol, but actually passes the Senate as well and can be turned into law? So in conclusion, although this bill may not seem very realistic at the moment, I take comfort in knowing that there are plenty of good folks in Congress fighting for us and doing very real and tangible things. I really want to give a shout out to Representative Nanette Diaz-Barragan, who is from California. I don't know if any of you have heard of her or seen her at the hearings with the Department of Homeland Security's secretary, but she gave her quite a regañada because she happened to be crossing the border when an asylum seeker was being turned away. And she recorded the whole thing with the whole encounter with the border agent. And later, when the Department of Homeland Security's secretary was brought forth to testify, you know, she called her out and said, you're turning away our people. You don't know what's happening at the ground, or you're being willfully ignorant of the injustices that are being committed on our border. And that's not okay. And so I really encourage you all to look her up. Again, her name is Representative Nanette Diaz-Barragan out of California. It's a really powerful video. And it just gives me hope, right, that we have these people like her standing up and calling out the Trump administration for the injustices that they're committing and for their lack of humanity and for their lack of respect for the rule of law. And so shout out to her. Thank you for fighting for our communities. We will continue doing our work to also make our communities better. And again, thank you for tuning in to UndocuTalks. We will catch you next time.
As always, thank you for tuning in. This has been episode 3 of our third season. I've been your host and producer for this episode, Rafael Martinez. Rolando Rosco was our sound engineer. Our scriptwriter was Melissa Noemi Garcia, and our creative team was led by Paola Monarres. Alejandro Mendiaz provided us with important news in the Undocu News segment. Other Undocu Talks collective members include Frank Berlanga Medina, Julio Molina, Nancy Canales, Cindy Nava, and Dr. Rosy Evelyn Lima de Padilla. Remember to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at UndocuTalks. Shout out to our graphic designer, Jerry Mateo. Jerry Mateo Designs. My job is to tell stories and communicate values through design. If you are interested in my work, follow me on Instagram at Jerry Mateo Design. And please stay tuned for our next episode, which airs on the last Monday of every month. We would also like to thank 89.9 KUNM, the radio station located at the University of New Mexico, for allowing us to use their recording studios for this episode.